You're listening to episode 31 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or PodioBooks.com, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find podcaster interviews, articles, the Gearheart soundtrack, and more. Or you can email me at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time on The Gearheart, Nicholas allowed Astrid further insight into his motives, revealing more about his hatred of magic. Keegan awakened to more torture, but met a very unexpected ally. As Greta whispered to him in the darkness, Keegan learned of the possibility of escape. What will become of him? Find out on The Gearheart. Bitter sea air blasted Cog's vibrant red hair across her face as she stared over the bow of the freighter. The waters of the Occidentia swelled beneath the vessel, but the weight of the ship negated them to the point that it was no different than being on dry land. Cog wore a mask of mental exhaustion as she looked out over the sunset waves. It had been 5 days since the incident at Cerceval, and circumstances placed Cog in direct leadership of the group. She never found it a comforting idea. The warrior preferred to work alone or with a partner. Too many people just meant trouble. She managed Augustus and Maeve with little difficulty, but events didn't warrant a real leadership challenge. Not yet. Pretending she was cold, Cog pulled her coat tight around her waist and made for the door to below decks. The Gull freighter conspired to make them as uncomfortable as possible, as it made its way toward the lowlands, its hard bed, poor seals, and a constant smell like wet, decaying cloth proved less than ergonomic for the already taxed band of travelers. The discomforts didn't faze Cog, but she knew Augustus and Maeve would be unhappy. Of course, it was difficult for anyone to be pleased about their situation. And still, Cog's mind drifted to Jonathan. Did Auden Slade still occupy her dear friend's body, or was Jonathan alone in a dangerous place with no friends to help him? Cog remembered her promise to her ward and bit her lip in frustration. She promised Jonathan he could leave the Seekers without repercussions, but now she couldn't even be sure that he still lived. At least, she couldn't be sure that he lived in any capacity worth salvaging. Cog cursed Slade's name under her breath, doing her best to restrain her fury. A sense of shame welled within her. She had so foolishly cast aside her bond to Jonathan, leaving him friendless in that pack of thieves, and all because of her own weakness. All because she wanted to be alone. She needed to grieve at the time. She needed to get away to understand the things that Jonathan said to her in that snowy garden. And yet, she should have known better than to trust the Seekers. The loss of Isabel affected her severely. She believed she understood how Jonathan felt about the late agent, and the warrior wanted Jonathan to be happy above all else. After all, when she was friendless and alone, doomed to destruction, he was the one who had saved her. Jonathan stood by her when all others were cowards, when the rest of the Seekers were forced to retreat. Jonathan fought the Antonellos alongside the mechanical woman, and in spite of all odds, they shared in that triumph. Cog knew, however, that Jonathan needed a flesh and blood human woman, and Isabel made him happy. By failing to save Isabel, she had only furthered her friend's downfall. As she made her way down the hallway toward the team's quarters, she lamented not drowning herself in the river when she was small. If only the Gearheart had never come to exist.
Cog.
It was Augustus. The mechanic leaned against the bulkhead, resting his head against the steel hulk. The lilac bags under his eyes burned underneath his head of matted white hair. He made no secret of his lack of sleep, nor did he have the mental fortitude to hide it. The engine grease on his gloved hands belied his recent endeavors somewhere on the ship.
"What are you working on?"
asked Cog. "The engines. They weren't very efficient," came his even reply.
"And now?"
"Now we should make landfall about a day faster. The captain was so impressed he offered me a job." Augustus's hollow laugh slapped about the metal hallway, the sudden shock of it causing him to wince. He tried to recover by smiling absentmindedly at the floor gratings, but his eyes began to slicken. The mechanic sniffed and wiped his nose on the rough surface of his fireproof gloves. "This ship is in a lot of pain, Cog," said the mechanic. "A lot of pain. I mean, these guys are terrible sailors, you know? You know who services the engines? The cook. Isn't that wild? If I stayed here, I..." Cog set her jaw and crossed her arms.
"You can't be serious."
"No," sighed the mechanic. "Of course I'm not." Cog looked him over, sizing up his scorched clothing, his tattered apron, his greasy face, and she felt her heart sink. To be covered in mechanic's filth, smelling of petroleum and metal shavings, and yet beyond smiling, it was like seeing a forgotten book without a cover. Augustus's arms wrapped tightly around him. Cog's chrysanthemum eyes met his, unflinching.
"You came up here to tell me you were leaving, didn't you?"
A tear welled up in his left eye, and Augustus blinked it away, leaving it to clean his cheek.
"I told the same thing to Maeve, you know. I told her I wanted to leave. I told her I'd rather be here when the world ends. And you know what she did?"
Cog heard Isabel say.
"She slapped you?"
In the back of her mind. She knew that's what the agent would have said, and it would have brought the man out of his stupor. Maybe Isabel kept the team glued together that way, but Cog didn't know how to behave around the others. Incredibly, with the death of the agent, Cog found herself trying to maintain a team of seekers when all she wanted before was to avoid them. The red-haired woman met Augustus's gaze without judgment or anger.
"She kissed me, Cog," laughed the mechanic. "She kissed me." And he pointed to his lips. "Me. And then she thanked me and said I could go if I wanted."
"How strange,"
said Cog, groping for a decent reply. The idea of a kiss between the beautiful Maeve Manners and their odd little mechanic failed to congeal in her head. Full possession of the image eluded Cog, and she blinked confusedly. What must the conversation have been like? What could have happened next? Cog's depression lapsed to temporary curiosity.
"I know, right? What a crazy bird,"
said Augustus, shaking his head slowly.
"I'm not your hero, that's stupid. That stuff's for people like you."
"Maybe you were meant for great things, Augustus."
"What, like the time I saved Isabel?"
Augustus's lip quivered. Soon, his composure would disintegrate.
"No, like the time you saved me. Don't forget that you rebuilt me from the ground up 2 years ago."
"I wasn't in that fight. We left you and Jonathan to die when they killed Donovan."
Cog took a step closer and folded her arms behind her back.
"But you came back, my friend. You came back and picked up the pieces when no one else would.
Maybe I did. I couldn't let all that beautiful work go to waste.
The reason does not matter. Even you are capable of heroism, Augustus,
said Cog. Maybe so.
You have the kiss of a beautiful girl. Did she not tell you these things?
She did, but... Augustus began. I knew you'd be straight with me. I know everything about you, Cog. Everything except what's in there. Augustus pointed to the gear heart hanging around Cog's neck. Cog smiled. It was a long and painful thing, and it felt as though her face stretched in a way that it hadn't stretched before.
I'm afraid there are only two men who know what's in there, Augustus.
Your father and your brother?
Wrong on both counts, my friend,
said Cog, striding past him.
But I must bid you good day now. Since we are about to make landfall sooner, I would like to be alone for a while.
The broken skyline of the city of Keldinorn in central Caldavia bled smoke into the clouds, a dying landscape. The cracked, blackened buildings feebly reached for the weeping skies, and distant reports of gunfire wafted through the air, ghosts of those still locked in combat. Fear infused every timber, every flagstone, and every darkened hallway of the old capital. Death shepherded men away from the city in droves. The people of Caldavia had heard the call of revolution, and now they screamed, cried, and blasted their reply. Astrid cared not for their plight, as she looked on in disgust from the bell tower of Antonello Manor. Nicholas could not have painted a better picture of the corruption and evils of man to illustrate his point. She watched as they stabbed each other, shot each other, and tore each other apart with mortars and grenades. All for what? For some festering wasteland of a backwater country whose leaders abused their power with wild abandon. And when the revolutionaries won, what then? Why then, there would be another corrupt, disgusting tyrant shouting orders from the top. This was the civilization that lay balanced on the precipice of magical technology. Every day that Astrid watched their pathetic deaths was another stroke, clearing the clouds from her eyes. Nicholas had given her clarity, and she understood everything now. They must all be destroyed. That knowledge eased her work at night, when she would slip out of Antonello Manor to kidnap and kill the soldiers who were foolish enough to camp close to the castle. In a time like this, it was so easy for men to go missing or turn up dead. No one would ask any questions in the middle of a war. Astrid thanked the revolution for teaching her that men were simply livestock to be harvested, and she also appreciated how it furnished her with a steady supply. Astrid established a routine for when she took the soldiers. First, she walked into a camp, clad in her indestructible arcane armor. The first man to call out would take a shot from her stun gun, rendering him inert for the next hour or so. Then Astrid would butcher the rest of those camping nearby with her silent poison dart repeater. A single prick of the dart would awaken them, but not allow them much breath with which to shout. Oh, how they cried softly, scarcely able to make a sound until their lungs filled with fluid. Disgusting. Their cries and pleas offended her, and sometimes she would hasten their deaths to shut them up. Then her servants would appear, great metal creatures with long arms, powerful legs, claws, and padded feet. Swift and silent, they would carry the stunned man back to Antonello Manor and in through the new defenses, past trap after trap, and finally into the heart of the estate, where the convergence generator lay sleeping. Then they would bring him to the extractor. Even after 20 victims, Astrid did not tire of the brutal efficiency of her machine as it pulled souls out of their bodies. It was a purification for those taken. They lost all of the weakness and sadness that made them human and became perfect energy. And in being consumed by the devices of Astrid's creation, those people would invariably become other types of energy, thermal, electrical, and so on, becoming one with the planet. The extractor was not perfect. Certainly, the life energy ripped from her victims retained none of its sentience, not like Nicholas or the Gearheart. She understood very well what made Nicholas a god. He was not human. He was the purest form of energy, sustained within a wonderful body of gears and wires. Every time Astrid tore away the essence of a person, she saw it for a fleeting moment, brilliant and luminous, before it disappeared into the capacitor. As wonderful and moving as Astrid found the experience of seeing raw soul energy, she knew that Nicholas's father's artistry far surpassed hers. She fed some of the life energy to the brass servitors. They were so beautiful and zealous, and she could not resist admiring her own work as they trembled with the new sustenance inside them. They danced and played, their polished exoskeletons shimmering in the limpid light of the main ballroom. Astrid did not name them. She did not need to name something that so perfectly understood her will. What she wanted dead, they would kill. What she wanted alive, they would subdue. Nicholas enjoyed them as well, and so she felt pleased. Astrid pumped the rest of the energy into the massive capacitor attached to the convergence generator. It thrummed with power, and Astrid saw that it maintained enough energy to test the convergence generator. She snapped open a panel on the side of the capacitor and read the gauges inside. The device definitely seemed ready, though Astrid was unsure of the results an impure soul, or in this case, the remains of several souls, would give. Astrid was going to see it for the first time. She and Nicholas would test the generator on the city of Keldenorn, bringing judgment to all the undeserving swine outside. Soon she would hold the Gearheart. Soon Astrid and Nicholas would fix everything. Cog, Augustus, and Maeve made landfall in the city of Redfield on the southern tip of the lowlands. From there, they could find a less savory ship captain to take them to Caldavia. The trade embargoes restricted any Northlander from crossing into that country, but in the lowlands, all things were possible. However, the sinking sun told Cog that they would have to wait another day before arranging passage. Back on the boat, when Augustus asked about the whereabouts of Darren, Cog told the mechanic that his former partner had chosen a different side, and that Darren would kill them on sight if he could. In light of their recent treason against the Seekers, Augustus readily bought the story. It became apparent that no one felt like they really knew Darren, given the ease with which Augustus and Maeve accepted Cog's explanation. As they made their way down the docks toward the harbor district, the trio began to understand the difference between the Northlands and the Lowlands. Rusted hunks of ships, barely operational, swayed in the salty air as their captains dumped their spoiled cargo overboard into the harbor, rather than paying their crews to offload it. The air reeked of rotting bananas and dead fish, and Cog thanked her father for making breathing optional. "Look at this place," said Augustus.
"I see it,"
said Cog. "They don't care one whit for what they're doing to this place."
"It's exactly what the Seekers were trying to avoid,"
said Maeve.
"What do you mean?"
asked Cog.
Augustus cupped his hand over his mouth as they passed a particularly rank pile of spoiled cargo. Bananas, oil, coffee. This place is rich in resources, but it's owned almost entirely by Northlanders and Kaldavi. The natives hate us here, and I can see why. We treat them like dirt. Cog frowned.
You assume that countries will be pillaged for their magical resources as well?
Maeve stepped closer to Augustus as they walked onward.
Everything exported from the lowlands is priceless in the world economy, but magic is so much more valuable. Kidnappings, murders, extortion. The world is going to go crazy. This is all the proof you need.
Cog stepped forward and affixed the two former agents with a stern gaze.
Well, perhaps you hadn't noticed, but we have all the proof we need on another relevant case. An organization created to control all of a single resource will eventually become self-serving and murderous as well.
Cog, maybe it was just... Augustus began.
What? Just a bad council? I seriously doubt that. They only wanted to protect the Seekers, even at the expense of the goals of the Seekers. Why is that so hard to believe? They're not like that,
said Maeve.
I have intervened on dozens of missions. To what end, Miss Manners? Surely, if the Seekers thought that magic was so dangerous, they would have wisely sought to eliminate it. Augustus, you have to understand why I didn't join the Seekers now.
And you don't think that magic is dangerous? Asked the mechanic, a thin note of doubt in his voice.
I do. I think it's extremely dangerous.
So what is your solution?
Try to have faith in mankind,
said Cog with a fleeting smile. The mechanic couldn't hide his confusion. You can still say that, after everything that was done to you?
I'm sorry, Augustus. It may be difficult for you to understand. I didn't see planes in the sky when I was a little girl, and your glass and steel castle simply didn't exist. Don't you ever wonder what magic will bring us? Maeve, have you ever considered it?
Of course I have, Cog. I wanted to see the day where we could finally work in the open,
said the other woman.
And I don't agree. Mankind is not ready for magic. Just look around you.
Cog surveyed the dirty wharf, the impoverished workers, and the sad state of nature as progress trampled it underfoot, and she looked up at the stars as they winked on like pinpricks in the sky. The path of the sun became a pool of clear cyan as the hues of sunset crept onto the swelling ocean water and its dying rays reflected off her pink irises.
History has settled this debate already, I'm afraid,
said the warrior.
We have tried it your way. Now we shall try it my way.
When the group cleared the docks, they found lodging for the night in a run-down, ten-sided hotel on the wharf. When they entered what passed for a lobby, a bored Northlander settler greeted them from behind a scratched-up mahogany desk. He held in his hands a copy of the Redfield Caller, a Northland language paper. There's nothing strange about seeing a Northlander paper in the lowlands. Many of Augustus's countrymen immigrated to the lowlands when the petroleum rush hit, as the swampy country was the preeminent source of oil. Mountain ranges had a tendency to destroy potential oil formations with the tremendous heat, pressure, and unevenness of the base rock. The lowlands contained not a single mountain and were barely touched by a sloping hill. Wildcatters and surveyors got fires in their bellies just looking at the mossy, reed-strewn landscape of the countryside. So when Augustus bent down to read the front of the man's paper, it was not because he found its appearance odd. It was because the headline read, Strange Lights Over Kaldavi Capital.
May I see that? Asked Augustus.
You getting a room, you and the ladies?
Yeah.
You paying by the day?
Asked the innkeeper.
Augustus snorted. What other options would I have?
By the hour?
The mechanic blushed. He then paid the man for a night in the room and bought his paper. They didn't have much money when they evacuated, and Augustus had to make do with selling the remains of what weapons he could salvage from the Avenger. Most of them had some sort of magical properties, but Cog had convinced the mechanic that they didn't have the luxury of saving money from their day jobs. Once they were safely in their rooms, Cog and Maeve listened as Augustus read the article. "This is from 2 days ago. It basically says here that a couple of patrol boats spotted a bright light just off the coast of Caldavia, over Keldenorn."
"What was it?"
asked Cog. "It doesn't say. I'm guessing that whoever witnessed this article didn't go to investigate."
"It has to be Astrid's doing,"
said Maeve. The former agent's voice contained a strange certainty in it, a twinge of feeling barely detected by Cog on the periphery of her senses. She had the tiniest waver when she spoke, as though she didn't mean to say what she had just said.
"What do you know of this?"
asked Cog. The young woman shrugged, frowning.
"Nothing, really. I just have a feeling."
The red-haired warrior stepped closer, her eyes widening.
"Really? How often do you have these feelings?"
Maeve took a step back.
"I don't understand. What do you mean?" "I'm asking how sure you feel about Astrid's involvement with Keldenorn."
Augustus spoke up. "That's a bad question, Cog. We know that that's where Jonathan was supposed to go to meet Nicholas, so we knew Astrid would be with him."
"Well, yes, but..."
Cog's face blazed with excitement. She smiled, not the smile from the docks, but a real grin full of hope.
"Maeve, how many men have you charmed with your magic?"
5. 8, if you count women,"
she responded. Cog sat down on the bed. It groaned horribly under her weight. She stood back up.
"And of those 8 people, how many of them still live?"
Cog thought she saw Maeve's eyes grow a bit wet.
"Cog, I don't want to talk about this right now. Don't we need to be worrying about Keldenorn?"
"Please, Maeve."
Augustus nodded his interest as well.
"Fine. It can scarcely be classified, now that I've gone turncoat,"
said the blonde girl.
"I was involved in 6 interrogations. I got close to the target and charmed them, and then they would tell me what I wanted to know, provided that I framed it in the right context. I was only called in when we were dealing with somebody particularly dangerous, so most of the time it ended with the Queen's men killing the target after we knew what we wanted."
Augustus wrapped his arm around Maeve. I didn't know they put you through that."
"Yeah, well, maybe now you understand why I didn't want to just up and leave like you two. I've done lots of things for the Seekers, and I'm not going to just give up on them."
Cog gave Augustus and Maeve a moment, then asked,
"Were you ever present for those killings?"
She attempted to pose the question in as gentle a voice as possible. Augustus's face soured.
"Give it a rest, Cog. We're not talking about the Seekers anymore."
"I'm not talking about that. Please, just answer the question."
3 of the 4. Cog, I don't want to talk about those,"
said Maeve. Cog took Maeve's hand, much to Augustus's surprise, and held it.
"What about the one you did not see?"
Maeve sat down in a chair next to the door and crossed her arms tightly. Her knuckles whitened, but her face remained composed. Her lips seemed thin, not like the woman they'd rescued on the docks. It was painfully obvious that this was a sensitive subject for her, but Cog would not relent. She waited until Maeve was ready to speak, but she gave the woman no leeway to dodge her questions. Maeve's eyes, however, said that she wouldn't answer. Cog leaned down and touched her cheek.
"Maeve, this is important. I'll bet there was something you didn't mention in your reports after the assassinations, wasn't there?"
"Cog,"
said the girl, her lower lip stiffening. Cog held her gaze sympathetically.
"You aren't trusted because you're a charmer, and people know that you can hurt them in worse ways than death. There's something that you left out of your reports because you thought they would trust you even less. Isn't that right?"
Maeve nodded.
"Now that something is going to help me more than I can say, and I'll trust you more. Do you understand?"
Maeve nodded again, but Augustus's confusion was obvious.
"When that target was killed, the one you weren't present for, did you know it?"
Maeve looked to Augustus with a dawning horror on her face. She looked as though Cog had just found her deepest, darkest secret.
"He was not a bad man, in my opinion,"
she began.
"Leland. He was just trying to get to the bottom of it. Magic, that is. He was trying to figure out magic. He had found some pretty powerful relics, and he was getting close to being able to use them. I think he thought he was going to help people, but he didn't realize what kind of damage he could do. A person on the street doesn't really think about things like the Seekers do, you know? He couldn't have thought it through."
"I don't doubt that, Maeve,"
said Cog.
"Anyway,"
breathed the blonde girl,
"I was told to get close and get information."
Augustus cut in. "And you got too close?" Maeve laughed a bit and wiped her nose.
"Oh, definitely not. Leland was such a snob."
Cog didn't turn to face Augustus, but she could hear the mechanic sigh with relief.
"But I didn't think he was a bad person,"
said Maeve.
"And I told that to the Lord Officiate in charge of his file. They told me they weren't going to kill him, that they were just going to lead him on a fruitless chase for some worthless artifact. Then, one night..."
"You can tell me, Maeve. I don't blame you for what you did,"
said the warrior.
"One night, I heard him call out my name. It was just like the others. Just like every time someone dies with my mark on them, I can hear them call out to me. I knew he was dead. I just knew it."
"Can you find them?"
asked Cog.
"These people to whom you're connected?"
"I don't know."
"Yes, you do. There was something about the way you talked about Astrid. You know where she is, don't you?"
Maeve was terrified, but she answered.
"Yes. Yes, I think I do."
Cog suddenly embraced Maeve and held her tightly.
"Please, please tell me where I can find Orton Slade.
I just don't know these things."
"Please, Maeve, just tell me the first place that comes to mind when you think of him."
"Keldenorn. Orton Slade is in Keldenorn."
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
You had the crazy idea that writing your story was going to be the hardest part, and it would have been too if you hadn't wanted to get it published. But you had to go there. You decided you wanted to get your story to a publisher, see it in print, and become the next Stephen King, didn't you? Come on, admit it. You know I'm right. You wanted the adoring fans who travel untold miles to see you at a signing, fans willing to do anything for the briefest glimpse of you. Except publishers and agents are so unreasonable. They demand that you follow their rules and send in synopsis and sample chapters. Heck, they even insist that you format your work to their specifications. And while we're on the subject, who are they anyway? I mean, any publisher or agent will do, won't they? And really, anyone you submit to will totally believe your mom's word, right? Your story is totally the greatest thing ever, isn't it? Feeling a little deluded, aren't we? See, that's where Get Published comes in. Get Published is a bi-weekly podcast that discusses many of the things that you, a submitting writer, may be faced with. There are interviews with other writers, agents, editors, and publishers that delve beneath the covers to try and give you the insight you need to achieve your goal. You know the one. Come on, say it with me. The goal to get published. Get Published is available for download on iTunes or from www.michellplest.com.